Right, we ready to start? If we could quiet down, please. Okay. Right, so, excuse me. So I'm not Dave Robertson, as you can probably tell. Some of you know me, some of you don't. You probably should all know me. So I'm the TA for the course. My name's Thomas French. You can email me with any queries about the tutorials and exam questions and stuff like that. Yeah, so you should already know that, but I'm just reinforcing. Okay, so Dave wasn't able to give a lecture today, so I stepped in, you know, reluctantly, but no, it's fine. Okay, so today we're gonna talk about finite state machines, and I think this is the first time you're hearing about finite state machines. Is that correct? So I like to get quite a lot of interaction going. But we'll see how it goes. Okay, so is that a yes or a no? Yes. First time? Yes, good. Wake up. Okay. So we're going to look at some examples. I'm going to introduce the whole model of, you know, modeling system behavior using finite state machines. We're going to look at quite a nice example, looking at digital image processing, and we'll see how we can design a basic filter for that to get rid of the noise. Okay. So what we're talking about here is reactive systems. So they wait to receive an input, and they respond with an output or either a change of state. So do you know what a state is?
No.
Okay. I'm not sure if this lecture is being filmed. But anyway, that shouldn't change my behavior really, should it? Okay. So so a state would be like a unique configuration of the world, say, right? So we'll see how you'll see how this works. But so basically, you receive an input, and then you respond with either an output, which could be changing a state, or you change to a new state without an output. So there can be an output or not. Okay, so we'll look at these two different models. And the response depends on basically the history of what's happened so far. So this is quite abstract, but you're going to have to get used to that. So finite state machines are a tool for modeling reactive systems, as I've said. And they're not limited to software systems. So actually, this model is very old and predates computer science, which might sound a bit strange, but it's essentially a mathematical abstraction. So so it's used to specify required system behavior in a precise way. So we can do it in a very formal and precise way. And then you can implement it either as kind of software or hardware. So this is a way of modeling systems, right? OK. So I tend to go quite fast. So if I'm going too fast, you have to slow me down, OK? All right. So a formal definition. So we'll talk about transducer the model first, which is a model that where when you can receive an input, then you can have an output. So how do we define a finite state machine? Well, we have a set of input symbols that we call sigma. We have a set of output symbols, which we represent by lambda. Then we have a set of states, q. So this would be a finite set of states, right? A finite state machine. And then we have a set of transitions that we'll call t. And they take the form where we have a state, then we have an input and an output, and then it goes to another state. So we have a little tuple, a three-tuple, okay? And we can also use, and you'll see this much later, and you'll see in the tutorial exercises, that we can use epsilon when there's no output, or even for what we call empty transitions. Okay, yeah?
Does it always have to go to the next state, or can it go to any state?
Well, the I might be slightly misleading. It can go to any state. So the next state is defined by the transition. So it's not as in, there's no numerical progression, as it were. Yeah, so it's just a state, yeah.
So you can design loops.
Absolutely. We'll see loops are a very powerful element of this. So here we have, so we define an initial state of the system. So this would be a unique configuration, right, the initial state. And then we have, so here you can see, aha, the tools. So we have an initial state, what we call S0, and then we have some transition. So these are edges and nodes, right? You might be familiar from graph theory. So we've got edges, and then the nodes represent the states. So we have some state 0, and we have a transition. So we receive some input, and there could be an output, and then we transition to state 1. Okay, so this would be the next state. So as you can see, that this form is represented by the graph, okay? So let's look at an example. So we're looking at a classic example here, the parking meter example. So we have our sigma here. So this would be our What's sigma? Input symbols. And we have lambda, the set containing B and D, which would be the? Okay, so this, in some sense, this will hopefully make sense in the real world. So we've got M represents money, and T is a ticket request, and R is the refund. And then we've got our output, so it would be to print a ticket and deliver a refund. So you can see, so we haven't exactly said what these things represent, but the more detail you put in, the more complex the model will get, of course. So then we have our set of states, Q, 1 and 2, and these are all of our transitions. Okay, so I'm not going to go through each one exactly, but we have a very nice graphical representation here. So we can look at this, and we can say, well, we start in state 1. If we get a ticket request, we stay in state 1. So here you can already see that that's not a finite limit. So we could have an infinite number of ticket requests. But of course, if there's no money in the system, then we're not going to print a ticket, are we? So what happens if we see money? Well, if we see money, then we move to state 2. Now, we haven't defined, of course, what money is, what denominations, all these things. But of course, the model will get much more complex for that. So then we put a loop here, and we say if we receive more money, then we're going to stay in state 2 and just keep looping. But then, well, you'll also notice that there's been no outputs so far. So these have just been inputs. And in fact, in the formal definition, we define the epsilons here. But for some reason, they're not on the graph. But you know, you get the idea. So, and we tend to be kind of liberal with exactly how defined they are when we're doing them by hand, because some of it can be quite laborious, but anyway, or tedious. So if we're receiving money, so we're now in state 2, and if we receive a ticket request now, then of course we print the ticket and we can move to state 1. So in some sense, that's completed a full operation. But also, we have another case where if we're in state 2 and we receive money, of course we haven't said how much money and these kind of things, then if we receive a refund request, then we print the deliver, well, we deliver the refund. So that would trigger some action, right? So you can begin to see, well, there's also, yeah, of course, we cover the case that if there's no money in the system, we won't output a refund, a deliver refund action, because there's no money. So you can begin to see how this models the system behavior, right? And we call this, so there's you'll be looking at two types of finite state machines, the transducer, which means it has outputs, and also an acceptor, which just doesn't give any output but accepts certain strings. Okay? Yeah.
Is the first state the one which has no money?
Yeah.
So every time a refund is given or a ticket printed out, all the money is used?
Yes. You can see this is the state 1 basically is the holding state, right? It's the initial state that you sit in until you receive money. So this is how we're modeling it. So maybe you can see how there isn't one unique finite state machine for modeling system behavior. You can think that you could probably do this in quite a few ways. A lot of it depends on the level of granularity you want to go into. So if you want to define how much money, well, then you're getting more complex, right? You know, what coins do you accept? What notes do you accept? How do you, you know, maybe you use cards, you know, there's different formats. So this, you can start from very high abstract, and then you build down and you add more complexity. Of course, as the model gets more complex, the harder it is to reason over it. Okay? Any questions about that? Yes, sir.
Is a Turing machine a finite state machine?
A Turing machine is a much more complex. There's a progression in complexity. So a Turing machine is one of the most complex models of computation. So yeah, you can start to see here, this is the most basic. And you'll see what this represents. So this represents certain languages, certain types of like regular expressions you might be familiar with. This is the most basic kind of computation. So this is a computational model. So I was quite surprised when I learned that this is actually.
When we're in state 2, is it in parallel or step by step? Because we need to do both. We need to deliver refund and print tickets as well.
No, only one of these actions can take place at one time. Well, the input. So you receive an input and then you carry out an output action, if it's defined. Well, I think what this is saying is that they're mutually exclusive, in that you can't print the ticket and deliver a refund.
I thought it was just change.
Yeah, no. So this is saying that if you're in state 2, you've received some money, and you can either print a ticket or you can deliver a refund, you know. Yeah. So these actions all happen in sequence, right? They don't happen in parallel. That would require much more power to do. So yeah, so it's one action. So you'd get an input, and then an output action happens, yeah? Is that clear? Yeah? Okay, so let's go on. So we'll talk more about the behavior now. So we define what we call traces through the system. Okay, so this is the sequence of actions that can take place. So we say we have a finite sequence of alternating state and transition labels, starting and ending with a state. Okay, so this is a trace through the system. So you start in state 0, then you see an input and possibly an output, then you transition to state 1, and you keep going. Of course, the numbers could be the same because it could be a loop, etc. Okay. So we always start with S0 as the initial state. So for example, state 1 was the initial state, and that's indicated by the line. So this line indicates what start state. So can you have multiple start states, do you think? How would that work? So it wouldn't, right? So you can only have one start state. But we'll see. I don't know if we'll see it in this, but you'll see later on that here we haven't actually indicated the final state because it's a transducer. So one of the big differences between the transducer finite state machine is often it represents a model that's kind of always going, always living, right? So the parking meter doesn't stop. It just keeps going and delivering the tickets. Whereas acceptor states, which are kind of more abstract and used for other purposes, often has an accepting state, but it can have multiple accepting states, okay? But you'll see that. Okay, so basically what we're saying is a trace through the system is a sequence of states and inputs, outputs, and you start with a state and you end with a state, okay? So each of the transitions, subsequence must appear as a transition in T. So of course, do you have the idea of a valid sequence or not? So if the set of transitions includes a transition with states that don't exist, well, that doesn't make much sense. So we're saying it has to be a transition in T. Okay, so we'll look at some example traces now. So we're back to our example, and so here are some examples of the traces. Okay, so we'd start in trace 1, we'd see M, we'd move to transition 2 to state 2, and then ask for a ticket, then we have the output print, and we'd move back to state 1. Right, so you can see how you define the traces. Yeah. Of course, with loops, you can keep going. So you can keep going and going and going. So the behavior of the finite state means a set of all possible traces. So that's what we consider the behavior of the system, all of the traces, okay? And it's not necessarily finite, of course, because if you have a loop, then you can have an infinite number of subsequences, if you like. Okay? Everyone happy with that? I see nodding, yeah? Okay. So, now we'll look at smoothing a digital image. But before that, can anyone name the man in the photo? Alan Turing, yeah. An important figure, perhaps? So he's considered one of the fathers or founders of computer science. Yeah, he's a bit of a legend. So we're looking at just a snapshot, just a small slice from this image. And the idea is that we want to remove the noise. So we've segmented this into zeros and ones. So it's basically black or white. And we've got a few ones here that have creeped in through error in the system. And we want to correct that. Okay, so it's a very basic filter. So as I said, the idea is that we want to invert the kind of scattered ones and zeros that appear where they shouldn't, in a sense. Okay. So we're actually going to build a finite state machine to do this, but we're going to make a few assumptions first. I'm going quite fast, so I'm going to slow down a lot now. Okay? So we assume that the character E marks the end of an input sequence. Okay? So these are just some basic assumptions that we make. We also assume the first character of the sequence is not noise. And we want to ensure that any isolated ones or zeros in the input sequence are inverted. Okay? So all other characters in the input sequence translate directly to the output. So Dare I ask, has anyone got any ideas?
No, probably not.
Okay, so here's what we're going to try and do. So we're saying that, you know, the first one's not noise, and we see an E at the end, and we're going to guess that this one here and this zero here are noise. So in some sense, we're saying if we see the opposite, so if we see zeros and there's a one in there, or ones and there's zero in there, we're going to invert it, okay? Of course, there is the small issue of this line here, but we're going to just move over that. Okay, so what does the finite state machine look like? Ooh, that's not how it looks on my screen. These are meant to be green, and these are meant to be red, and these transitions are meant to be red, so that's not very helpful. And no one says it's because I'm using a Mac, okay? All right, so how does this work? So we've got our initial state, and we've got an end state here. So we represent the final state with two circles, with an inner circle there, okay? So have a look, see what you think. So here's an example to work through. So remember our assumptions that the zero, that the first character is not noise, and then we're going to try and invert the others, and we say we're ending with an E, okay? So it's actually quite interesting if you look at it. So what happens? Should we go through it? We've got plenty of time. Okay, so at the beginning, we're assuming it's not noise, okay? So it's a one or a zero. So that actually gives us information about what patch we're in. So if we see, so for this example, we see a zero. So we move down to transition to state four, okay? But then we see a one. But okay, I should say, you notice that there's no output on the initial, okay? So that's a small detail that's quite nice. So there's no output on the initial one. So what happens is we're then making up for the previous one, you see? So now, so we saw a zero, but we didn't output a zero. And now we could see, in state four, we could see, you know, an infinite number of zeros, and we'd be outputting zeros. But you'll see that the E is very important, because the E is the last one in the sequence, and it actually outputs the symbol of the previous one. So now, okay, so let's look at what would happen, for example, here if we have a 1. So we'd go to state 4, then we would see a 1, and we would output a 0, and we'd move to the black state, which is state 5. Okay? So now, if we saw a 0, we would output a 0. So you'd see we would have corrected it now. So we would have had two zeros in, okay? And then if we saw the E, we would just go out, and that would be three zeros. And we would have had three. One, two, three. So there's would have been four transitions, but only three input symbols, right? Okay, I'll work through this example then. So here we see a zero, and we go to state four. Then we see a one, we go to state five, but we output a zero. So that's one zero, okay? Then we would see another zero, we'd output another zero. So now we've had three inputs, but we've had two outputs. Then we would see a zero, right? And then we would see one, and we'd output a zero, because we're making up for the previous character. But then we'd see this one, and we'd move to state two, and that would output one, right? So now we've output the first one here, and then we would see, where are we here? We'd see a zero, but we'd output the one, and that would be the next one. And then we'd see another one, and we'd output the one, and then we'd see the E, so that would go down, and we'd finish. Yeah.
Doesn't this mean if we have 0101 0, 0, gray line, that it makes it only zeros?
Yeah. Basically, the problem is, well, the okay. So if we have 01, so what happens if we have 010101? Well, that, what would you call that situation?
Bug.
Sorry. Bug. I'd call that probably maximum noise.
Well,
the gray, yeah. Yes, this is true. But that wouldn't be very helpful for the filter. So if we had, yeah, so if we had 0101, the question is what would we correct? Because we're basically assuming that we have blocks of zero and blocks of one, right? And that we're only getting kind of minimal noise, yeah.
And if you have a block of
Well, it would assume it would start with the zero, right? So it assumes the first one's not noise. So it would move to here, and it would assume you're in a zero block. So then it would correct the one to a zero, and then if you saw a zero, and it would, so it would assume that you were in a zero, it would be in a white block, and it would turn all those ones to zero. Yeah? Okay. All right, does that sort of make sense? Yeah? I see some pretty happy faces. Good stuff. All right, so finite state machines are very powerful. They're very useful. You'd be surprised how often in research in the real world, how often they're used for modeling. However, there are some limitations. So there's actually no memory on states or transitions. So the actual memory is simply the location in the network. So you only know, so you don't even know, well, I mean, the basic way to sum it up is that it can't count. So, you know, if you have a state, you don't know how many. You might, if you have a loop on a state and then a transition, you don't know how many of those inputs you've seen. The only real memory is that you've moved from state one to state two. Okay? So, for example, what have we got here? All, so we can do things like all strings beginning with one, or all string, you know, we could extend that. All strings beginning with two ones, all strings beginning with three ones. But that would mean adding another state and another state. So you can see that it's still the memory is in the design of the finite state machine, the number of states and the transitions, rather than actually having a counter or a stack or anything. So here that would represent all the strings beginning with one, right? Because we'd input. So this is now an acceptor finite state machine, because there's no outputs. So it's just accepting a string of zeros and ones. So that would be our alphabet, zeros and ones. So we'd input a one and we'd move to this state. And this is actually the accepting state, right? So all strings beginning with one includes the string of one. And then we could see an infinite number of zeros and ones, okay? And then over here, as I said, we can do two. So we can represent two. But the counting is done in the structure of the finite state machine, not in any kind of counter. Okay? So the question here is, can we build a finite state machine that represents or that accepts all strings with equal numbers of zeros and ones? Let's have a vote. So who thinks we can? Given that it's on a slide of the limitations of finite state machines, you might want to reconsider, but okay. How many people think yes? A few. How many think no? The majority. Yeah. So it's not possible.
Can we just make a loop and count infinitely zeros and ones?
The point really is that you can't do this for arbitrary large numbers, right? You could build it for a fixed, a priori fixed. So if I said, you know, for five zeros and five ones, could you build it? Yeah, of course. But for n, how would you build it? Because there's no counter.
Well, can we have something like n branches from the start, from the starting state?
Yeah, but we define the limit of tractability. So it would get impossibly huge. So is it possible, in theory, you could, but you'd have to build it for every number.
Yeah.
So you'd have to build a brat. Oh, but wait a minute. No, you couldn't do that.
If it's infinite length, it's impossible.
You couldn't do that. Sorry, you couldn't do that, because which way would you branch? Yeah, but you don't necessarily know, because it's n. So you're not necessarily told beforehand. So how would you build, if you branched for every length, so you had one that was 1, 2, 3, you wouldn't know which one to pick. You'd have to look ahead. So of course, for a fixed number, yes, but in general case, no, you can't. Okay? So that's a big limitation. Of course, the next level, if you like, there's sort of a hierarchy of these machines. The next level has the ability to count. So this is the very basic fundamental model. probably the most basic, one of the most basic models of computation. Okay? So, as I suspected, I've managed to go through the lecture incredibly fast. I'm sure you don't mind. Are there any questions? Sure. Okay. Just to extend the lecture slightly, and so that I can feel like a real lecturer, I'm going to draw this on the board. Okay, so tell me how I would draw it. So remember, we're saying they have to have the same number. So I want a machine that will cover all cases for n. Yeah, well, it has to accept all the strings that would have an equal number of zeros and ones. So the point is, if I do something like a loop, so for zero, and then transition if I see a zero, right?
I mean, loop.
Well, an equal number. Sorry.
I think the loop.
Yeah, but okay. So the concept is that a loop doesn't count. Yeah. A loop could be any number. So how would you guarantee that you've seen the same number of ones and zeros? That's the constraint. You can't count. So it's saying strings with equal numbers, so the same number of zeros and ones. So you cannot guarantee that you've seen the same number of zeros and ones. Yeah? Okay? Yeah. Yeah. So in order to incorporate, you'd have to look at more information, because the idea is this is a basic filter for looking at kind of minimal noise. But of course, this is a classic problem, right? I mean, at a certain point, the amount of information you're getting for the noise that you're getting, once you cross that noise to signal ratio, then it's very difficult to get anything out of it. So it's sort of the assumption, yeah. But you're right. I mean, you could make it more complicated. And of course, you're welcome to go away and think about that. Or maybe I should make you do it in the next few minutes. You can't see two inputs. There's no parallelization. You'd think that, there it is. There's no parallelization, so you can only see one symbol at a time because it's just a sequence. But what you can do is label 0, 1, but that just means that you see a 0 or 1. You cannot see two symbols at the same time. Okay?
So we can't take strings or blocks?
No. No, you would just draw that. I mean, it's per transition, it's a single symbol. So if you want blocks, you just draw, you know. And then you can do loops, right? So I can say I want an infinite sequence greater than one. So I can just say go back here or go here. So, right? So that will just go. So later on, you'll see that you can use transitions that are empty. So there you can say, well, none, or an infinite number, so a loop there. OK? Let's get rid of that. OK, any other questions? Are we meant to finish on the hour? Okay, I'm not gonna. I don't know if I should trust you or not. Some people say yes. Some people say no. Okay. Well, are there any other questions? Have I inspired you?
Yes.
Good. I didn't expect that. Okay. Cool. Well. Thanks, and that's the end. Thank you. Okay.
I haven't quite said which of the things we did was like axioms, which were theorems, and which were like definitions or like.
Yeah, there's quite a few different terms for. Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, you know, axioms, premises, assumptions are all the same thing.
Yeah, not what I'm saying. Basically, like, for example, that the truth table of A implies B. Is that an axiom or, like,
it's a function definition. It's a function definition.
Like, so that A implies B is true.
It's taken as a fundamental definition, yeah.
So it's a definition, like, and, like, okay, so and the proof rules, are they like theorems or are they like axioms as well?
No, those you can prove yourself. If you can, well, maybe not prove it, but you can certainly think about the derivation of them. And I think you should.
They can be proved.
Yeah.
Like, I could find proofs of
The proof rules. Yeah, I mean, we did it in my tutorial more, that we looked at why the rules exist. So you can look at why. You can actually, if you think about arguments and validity, and then look at the rules, you should be able to work out why the rules exist. So why they stand logically. Yeah? So that's a good exercise to make sure you're understanding secant calculus. Yeah, so why you're applying them. And the lecture notes should help with that as well. Should make you think a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Not the slides,
no,
but the notes.
The notes, yeah. I went through the notes.
Okay.
Everything I was reading, the thing I was always asking was why, like, there wasn't any proof anywhere or anything.
It's because the course is more directed towards method and technique, so applying these things rather than going deep
I understand all the mechanics of it, like how to use them and all, but I haven't understand like how they were derived or
reference on
the reasons.
Yeah, that's fair enough, yeah, sure. But I mean, I would think about, so resolution and everything, they've all been they're formally proved, but these techniques that above are not. So the truth tables is just a representation of...
Yeah, of, so is there any like textbook or anything I could read on like the history of the thing or like...
The problem is that we've sort of... I mean, the secant calculus that we present is sort of a basic version. So if you go online, it gets much more complicated. So I don't know. I mean, I would hesitate to say go and read on Wikipedia and all this stuff because it actually gets quite technical and it will, you know, you might get more confused. But if you want, just pick up a book on propositional logic. I don't know what to recommend really, because most of the logic that I've done for sort of, you know, the different logics has all been in the context of computer science, but you probably want more general kind of logic.
Yeah, I'm more into mathematics than computer science.
Okay.
So I'm like I'm looking to more abstract
proofs.
I'm quite annoyed when I don't have like a proof of it. Like I want justification for everything.
There's a lot of stuff under there. I mean,
And for example, like implication is implication like in logic the same as like implication in mathematics? Like, because the way I knew implication, like the implication I knew before I was studying logic was like A implies B, and that's equivalent to not B implies not A, and that's it.
Like, not B implies not A.
Yeah, if A implies B, not B implies not A, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, and that's...
Yeah, I know. Well, the implication causes a lot of problems because we are using... Well, it's material conditional. It's conditional, like material implication. It's not the same as logical implication. So it is different.
It's a different implication.
There's two different implications.
So I shouldn't, like, confuse them. I should, like, say that it's two different things.
Look at the Wikipedia article on that, actually.
Okay.
Because it's got some Venn diagrams and sort of other ways of representing it, and there's more. There is quite a lot if you look at validity, arguments, that gets a bit technical, but look at the stuff on validity, look at the material implication. So I hesitate to use the word implies.
Yeah.
I prefer to use material the material condition or material implication.
Okay.
Because it's different from the logical implication, but basically everyone calls it implies because, well, in the least in this course, the tutoring and stuff, we're maybe not as precise as we should be. But look it up, look that up, yeah, and you'll see the differences.
All
yeah. But for this, I mean, you'll have a chance. Are you doing mathematics?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'll have a chance to go into all that stuff later on. I wouldn't worry too much about it now.
Okay.
Yeah.